Money is kind of always an issue, whether you have a lot, whether you don't have any money, whether you have a little bit of money. And I realized that by listening to a podcast by Fabrice Florent, with a French podcaster. And so I decided to receive someone. And Pedro Correa, who is a friend of mine that I received on this podcast, connected me to Peter Koenig, who is probably the most well-known person talking about that topic, the relationship to money. His book, 30 Lies About Money, was actually recommended by Deepak Chopra, George W. Bush, or even the Pope John Paul II. So I guess he knows what he's talking about because he has done more than 30 years of, retreat around money. And so with Peter, we talk about earning your life. We talk about your self-worth. We talk about the relationship to money. How can it be sane and why it is usually insane, that it brings freedom, does it bring security, what does it bring exactly? And you'll see, I think it's a very interesting conversation, and so I'll let you listen to it. Allez, Vlan, c'est parti! Hi, everyone. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Hello, Gregory.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I'm glad. I think this is the very first time that I have an author whose book was recommended by Deepak Chopra, but also George W. Bush, but also the Pope John Paul II. And the question that is raising in my head is, how come money is such an important topic?
Well, if you... let me just answer that first. Before I answer the why, I want to reinforce that it seems to be a very important topic, and anybody listening can go and discover this by themselves. You go into any train, tram, bus, whatever, or restaurant, and listen, as I have done, to the conversations around you, and you will see that money will come into the subject between every 2 and 3 minutes, almost into every conversation. So I just want to confirm that it gives the appearance of being incredibly important because we all talk about it so much. Why is it so important? Because, or this is my belief, we have all been educated to believe that in order to be successful and have what we want in our life, we need to have money. And this education starts extremely young. It's from our parents. They don't even realize that they're teaching us this. But in the first time you go into a supermarket as a small child and you reach out for all the beautiful things on the shelves, the first lesson that you learn is that you're not allowed to have all the beautiful things on the shelves immediately. You can only, if you scream and shout enough, maybe are allowed to have a small sweet or something, and then you're dragged over to another part of the supermarket, and then you see what we call money for maybe for the first time in your life. And you hear the word money, and it might be plastic or paper or something, and you get the first lesson. If you want something in life, you need to have money, and that's where it all starts.
Mm. And then comes this expression that I don't really like, but that I use, which is earn your living.
That's right,
gagner sa vie. What do you think of this expression? And
well,
is it weird that I feel awkward? I mean, I feel it's kind of awkward to me. It is.
Yes, it's you're right to have that feeling. But let me just say, Gregory, that's the second lesson, because after the child has learned the first lesson, that in order to get what you want in your life or to be what you want in your life, you need to have money. The child asks, "Well, where is the money?" And most children know where money is hidden at home. And a very robust statistic, because I've been giving money seminars for almost 40 years, but I ask every single group, how many of you, who stole money from their parents as a child? And the response is between 40 and 70% every single group. It's a very robust figure. So in fact, most of us are thieves at a very young age.
I was.
And then we get this message, second lesson from our parents: you're not allowed to steal money. You shouldn't. Stealing is bad. So what you do for your money, you need to earn your money. You need to gagner ta vie, earn your living, earn your existence. And I'm happy that you feel uncomfortable with this, because actually we are the only creatures on the planet that have this particular system. And it's totally unnatural, because all other creatures are born and have a right to live and a right to take all the resources they need without having to earn anything.
Yeah, because earning your living, it means that you've lost your life
before you've even
in the first place.
That's right.
Yeah.
At the moment you're born, you've already lost your life. I mean, we should be laughing at this, but it's no laughing matter, really.
No, really, it's so weird. There is this quote that I have from you, which is: "There's no sane relationship to money, but if you love it." I don't know if I translated it right, because I wrote it in French, but I was wondering what you think about it, and can you just explain a little bit?
Yes, I'm talking about now and the future.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at history, if we go back now to 300 years when the present system and our relationship to money was designed, the relationship to money actually designed the system that we have right now, and it became the system of success for science and industry. So for the material production in factories, money and the way money was designed was extremely important. But to cut it short, it was actually a system based on fear. When you talk about earning or living or gagner la vie, you're actually frightened of losing your living and losing your losing your life, and that is actually your existence, and that is actually what the motivation has been and still is in our factories. Just look at China. You go into the factory to work, which is usually unpleasant, to earn your living, meaning make money, in the hope that at some point you'll have accumulated enough that you can stop doing that and start living your life. Now, this has been extremely successful for the production of material goods on a production line. And it's extremely strongly conditioned into each of us, not just mentally, but it's like it's been inculcated into our bodies and souls, and it's been inherited over many generations. Now, I'm coming to the answer to your question.
No, it's fine. I mean, we have time. It's fine.
Okay. Coming to the answer to your question, what's happened, which is potentially tragic, is that we have become like machines ourselves. We're on automatic with this conditioned system. And what we are unconscious or have been unconscious of is that it's an extractive process, extracting capital from nature. So that, you know, we're seeing the extinction happen. We're seeing all the difficulty with climate change and all the other equality and all the other problems. They are actually a consequence of this same system, which was very successful for previous generations, but has gone on automatic. It's like we don't know when enough is enough. We have difficulty, without becoming more conscious, of actually stopping this extractive machine. So my saying about love is that we need to understand that we have been working and are still working on a fear-based system, which is constructed on a fear-based relationship to money and to our life, actually, which was successful for the Industrial Revolution. But now, if we continue it, we are actually going into extinction. And what we need is a love-based system of understanding that we need to love ourselves, we need to love money, but in a different way than just accumulating it. And we need to have a system of currencies which are actually based on love.
that is a very nice thinking, but at the same time, I feel like we are not there at all. I mean, and I was wondering, why would you say that this has 300 years? I feel like before that, money was already something. I mean, we were selling pretty much everything. We were exchanging also things, but the kings had more things than the peasant, or, you know, people who could buy slaves, and, you know,
money was... this is true, but the particular dynamics of the present system were actually created in the 17th century, particularly by a group in England under a man called Harbin. And part of his group contained Isaac Newton and the philosopher John Locke. And they figured out this system of creating paper money and interest rates. And
right.
Later came brokers' fees. And so we have a system of exponential interest. I won't go into all the details of this, but the actual system was designed to produce material goods, material products like steam engines, pharmaceuticals, nowadays motor cars, everything that you can produce on a production line. And what the problem, so this worked for probably your grandfather, Gregory, my father, uh-huh. and all those generations back, and was the system of success. The problem with it, with the present generation, and what has not been noticed, is that the needs have shifted from material needs of things being produced on a production line. And if you ask present generations, what do you need right now? It's not, you know, the 10 more computers and five more cars. What you'll hear people answer in my seminars is what they answer. I need to have freedom, security, peace, happiness, good health. Basically, things which are immaterial, not material.
That's very true indeed. And but I feel like what I hear on my side and what I can feel within me is you want to take out the financial pressure in your life so that you can have that freedom. But a question that I have is, isn't it not a dream, but somehow like something that is not achievable? Like I have this example that I take in my book of this blue collar, you know, married, two children, good life, everything's fine. I mean, blue collar, but not great life, like successful, like we could imagine in the Hollywood movies, but, you know, like just a normal life, happy life. And at some point, the guy earned the lottery. And what happened next is he's losing his wife, kids, and committing suicide. And I feel like a lot of us are dreaming about, you know, having millions and, you know, being able to do this and that and this and that and having no financial pressure. But eventually, I feel like it is not working either. So is that even achievable to have this freedom you were talking about?
It is possible. Mm-hmm. It is achievable. Right. But you need to... and this is what my work over 40 years has been about.
Yeah.
You need to become conscious of your relationship to money. And what money this relationship to money is doing with you and what you are doing with your money. And if you're not conscious, you're just on automatic, as I described before, right, like a piece of machinery. And money has become the taboo, the deepest taboo subject in society. So for people that are developing themselves, that are becoming more conscious, it is actually the last subject that they touch. They touch subjects like nutrition, sexuality, meditation, spirituality, and everything else before it occurs to them that they should be looking at their relationship to money. And actually, when people do look at their relationship to money, they touch the deepest levels of their what they think of as their spirituality, because they're touching something which is deeply locked up in this societal taboo, actually.
Super interesting.
They're touching the deepest parts of themselves. And you gave the example of this person who committed suicide in the lottery. Not everybody commits suicide, but
hopefully.
but many have great difficulties after they've won the lottery, because actually, while you're hoping to win, many people get a sort of buzz out of their hope to win, and after they've won, that buzz is gone, and they're faced with a whole new set of life circumstances, and for some, this new set of life circumstances, including losing your friends, because you were brought up in another ambiance in society. I mean, it demands. It's very demanding. It's a very demanding situation for many people, which is why you hear many sad stories of people who have won the lottery.
It's very interesting, and at the same time, I feel like maybe people listening to us will feel like these two guys, they're wealthy and they're talking about money, and they're talking about money because, well, they can.
Because
we're privileged, which we are, because, well, being born in Europe is already a large privilege, basically. So the question basically is it an issue or a subject that we talk about when we are wealthy and that, you know, real people, I would say, I don't know about real people, but, the most people, the majority doesn't have this disadvantage of being able to talk about money. You know what I mean? Like, is it something that we talk about because we're wealthy, or
people that are wealthy don't talk about their money?
That's true.
So it's not about being, it has nothing to do with your level of wealth or your level of debt. Mm-hmm. So if I can just explain a little bit,
sure.
The thing to really understand is what money is and how it works, because this is what none of us have been educated in. I went to a good school, I went to university, I went to business school. In none of these places was I ever taught what money is and how it works. So basically, nobody's been taught this in our society, and this is what I suddenly realized. I need to study this to somehow manage my life and be happy. And I decided, I know you've had Pedro Correa on.
Totally.
And mm-hmm. he recommended that you contact me. So I made a decision when I was 34, when I had a fair amount of money and was so-called successful, that I would stop. I would never again do anything in my life that I didn't want to do. And I'm now 74. I've been doing what I love for 40 years, actually. And during this, I started to train other people to become like me. I thought, why should anybody do things that work that they don't love doing, and particularly work which is damaging to them and their families. And I had some of the wealthiest people in my trainings from top companies. And I was really surprised that these people who were so-called positions of power were not capable of doing what I was doing. And this was a seminal moment for me to start researching the relationship to money, because I saw that when they started sharing around subjects of finance, I noticed how their energy shifted and something changed in them in comparison to when they were talking about their values and what they loved in life and so forth. As soon as they would start talking about money, it seemed that something would change. And I was saying, you know, how does this happen to us? Because money is something that we humans have created, and it's not like nature. And how come that something that we have created, like money, which was designed to help us realize our projects and our lives, is now actually doing the reverse? So this is the fundamental point, Gregory. One has to start researching what's happened there and what is money is the essential to see how money works, is the essential starting point to be able to analyze this kind of situation.
It is so interesting indeed. I've read this study about money, and they were explaining that, and you know that study, you know, by these Harvard fellows who did the study and said, you know, money is related to happiness until 70,000 euros.
It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense.
Okay.
So I know this study, of course. But, you know, these guys who did this study haven't looked at their own relationship. It's wishful thinking what they're sharing. I have 40 years of empirical experience of people from the wealthiest, from billionaire down to people who are heavily in debt. Mm-hmm. And this study just does not make it. It just doesn't apply. So what my work has been is to be able to diagnose everybody's relationship to money, to figure out how to do that, and then help them, if they feel they would like it, to be able to live their calling, their life, why they were born, if you like, at the end of the day, with money, but also without money, and with debt and without debt. And it has nothing to do with any quantity of money. This has to do with, I would say, consciousness and love. Those are the two things that really apply. So you know, the question is, for anybody that's not living their life fully, not living, let's call it the raison d'être, why you were born, you can start asking them, well, why aren't you doing that? And within 5 minutes, you will probably find a reason that is related to money. Like, you know, I have to put my children into school and that costs money, or I don't have enough money in the bank, or and. And this is irrespective of how much money people actually have. You have millionaires who will say the same thing.
And that's the weird thing for me. I mean, because I can understand that speech from someone who is in need. Mm-hmm. But then, and I agree, I know some millionaires also because of the startups industry. And I can see that, I mean, if they were happy before having money, they're still happy. But if they were not very happy before money, then they're not happy with money either. I mean, it doesn't change. And they have like real life problems, you know.
So this is what I studied for 10 years and can explain.
Okay.
So you need to look at how money works. And what I came to was that money is just a mental construct. So if you ask somebody, where is your money? If you ask a banker, where is your money? he won't be able, he knows that it's not in his bank, right?
Yes.
He can take out a little bit of money from his pockets, but he knows that that's not really where the money is either. Then he comes to say, well, actually, it's virtual. So what does that mean? You know, it's not touchable. It's not tangible. So where is your money? And the only logical conclusion to where your money is, Gregory, is that it's actually in your head. Money is a mental construct. It's in your head. It's not in your bank account. It starts in your head. It's simply an idea. Now, yeah. If you let me continue.
Sure.
So if you can follow this, money is an idea which you project onto an empty screen. Now, the screen is a piece of paper, which you call a banknote, or a piece of metal, which you call a coin, or it's into thin air, your online account. And it works through this process of projection. Now, you were talking about entrepreneurs. When you want to realize something in life, say as an entrepreneur, but just any initiative, any project, or even having a dinner party, it always starts with an idea in your head. And you project this idea outwards, and if you put energy behind it, you realize your idea, whether it's you organizing a dinner party or whether it's Elon Musk sending a man to Mars. Or sending a machine to Mars. It's the same thing. So we realize our projects through having an idea and putting energy behind it. Now, the problem comes if we are not conscious of the ideas we're putting energy behind. And that's what's happening with money, whether we're talking about people who are millionaires or we're talking about people in debt. So people have, you know, I will ask you, what is money for you? If I ask somebody, what is money for you? I get instantly answers. So the answers are money is security. Money is freedom. Money is happiness. But also money is dirty. Money is a source of conflict. Money. So these are ideas which actually are inherited very, very young and carried forward, not just in our minds, but in our bodies. And if we're not conscious of them, what happens is that just like an entrepreneur has consequences through having an idea and energy behind it, we are unconsciously putting energy behind these ideas. So somebody who says money is my security or my freedom, will automatically start running after money and start hoarding it and saving it because they believe that having money in their account, their bank account, will actually give them freedom and security. But actually, it doesn't give them freedom and security, so they continue running after money and they become a millionaire. And a multimillionaire, and they still haven't found their security and freedom, so they continue running. At the same time, Gregory, on the other side, there's a person who's saying money is war, like David Graeber, you've probably read. Money is uncomfortable. Money is heavy. Money is dirty. Money is, you know, capitalism is awful. These people, without being aware, they may be saying they need money for their rent or money for food, but actually unconsciously they're pushing money away from themselves. Now, if you understand how money is working in this way, you can see the consequences of this relationship to money in people's lives. You can relate it directly. And this has been the basis of the work and how I help people in terms of developing their relationship to money to become more happy with it, if you like, or more at peace with it. Because what we do is we look at the particular qualities that we're projecting onto it. Let's say you're saying that money is your security, right? What you're mm-hmm. really saying is, I'm an insecure person, hoping to become secure by having more money. So you're defining right. yourself as an insecure person. If you say money is freedom, you're defining yourself as an unfree person hoping to become free by having more money. Mm. And we can diagnose by a set of questions, we can diagnose people's relationships to money quite easily if they are interested mm-hmm. through the simple question of what is money for you. And then I have a secondary method to help them reclaim these qualities which they have projected onto external mediums or media mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to help them to reclaim these qualities to themselves. So for somebody who is saying money is my security, I help them to see that they are actually, the truth is, like any creature, they are really secure with money, but also without money. You know, a kangaroo doesn't have any money, and nor does a cat or a dog or a mouse. But they can be secure. Sure. They can feel secure. But also, let me just add on, because this is very important. It's very important to be able happy feeling insecure as well. So that when you can feel secure with and without money, and when you're happy feeling insecure as well, because there are circumstances, if you really want to have an adventure in life, you're not going to have much of an adventure if you're trying to be secure all the time. So you need, there are circumstances where it's really good to feel insecure, other ones where it's really good to feel secure. And when you can be happy with both sides, then you can tick this issue of security off. And then you don't maybe need to be a multimillionaire anymore. Then you get a sense of having enough. And then you can find yourself maybe with lots of money in the bank. I'm talking about my own history, by the way. Find yourself with lots of money in the bank, but actually you don't want it just sitting around there, because you can put it to much better purpose than having it sitting in a bank account somewhere. So I've gone on for a long time, but I felt it necessary to explain this, maybe as a basis for further questioning.
Sure. And actually, you know, a lot of people, when they're thinking, oh, if I had money, if I had money, I would do this. And if I had money, I would do that. And yet, in my experience, like very empirical, so it's not like a study or whatever, but it's more my friends. And what I can see is, they are doing none of those things. So money doesn't change really much. I have this friend who did a podcast about money, and he was like, he earned like millions. Mm-hmm. And yet, when people are asking him, what do you do in life? What do you want him to answer? He's not going to say, I have money. You have to do something. Socially, to be socially integrated somehow. So I would like you to maybe explain this. I don't know if it's a lie.
You're right. You're on the money, as they say, with this. You're right on the money. You know, almost every single money seminar that I've given, I've been giving them for more than 30 years, there's usually somebody who comes along and says, well, I can't really do what I want because I can't start my project because I don't have the money. I need to find the money first. And for 30 plus years, I've been saying, actually, the truth is that nobody who ever started an enterprise, whether it's a small one or a big one like Apple or Amazon, none of them ever started with money. Not one. So you're absolutely right. So, you know, how did it start? It always starts with an idea that hasn't existed yet, an energy behind the idea. And then when there's sufficient energy behind the idea, you know, a person with energy, a human being with blood in their veins, with energy behind their idea, who commits to starting something, they draw and attract the resources that they need to manifest what they want to manifest. And this may be money, maybe lots of money, it may be a small amount of money, it doesn't matter the amount, but they attract money, people, and all sorts of resources to the extent that is needed to manifest whatever they are to manifest. And, you know, I studied at business school. I know management, accounting, and the whole works. But I was never taught this at my business school. And I don't think any of our business schools are teaching it. And part of what I have loved to share in my book, I wrote my book, 30 Lies About Money, in 2001, when there was a lot of discussion about Amazon, because Amazon had not yet turned a profit. It was losing money one quarter after the next quarter after the next quarter after the next quarter. And there were many people saying Amazon is not going to survive. And it was 2001, I wrote in my book as an example, Amazon is a loss-making company and it is going to survive. I mean, this was my prediction at the time because I see the founder and I see the energy that he's putting into this and I see the service that he's providing. Now, Amazon then started to make a profit, so I lost that example in my book, but I found an even better one. There's a company called Xoma, which has finally, it's not quite folded, but the founder, imagine, Gregory, a company which continued for 38 years without ever making a profit. People can't believe this, but you can look it up.
Yes.
It's a publicly quoted company, ran for 38 years without making a profit. How long do you need to have something to call it sustainable? You know, 38 years. And you know, how people can't believe this who study normal business, but there it is. It's an empirical result. And how does it work? Well, if you understand what I'm talking about, you understand it is obvious. There was a founder there who kept on putting his energy behind, you know, what he was doing. And he was ingenious. He was creative. And he kept on being able to persuade people to give him all the resources, including money, even while they were making losses, because he had this passion. And
incredible.
This is really the message. And this is the message that Pedro Correa got when he came to see me talking about money, which actually he still refers to as changed his life, changed his career pattern. He was an engineer and went, because that's what he suddenly grasped. He suddenly grasped, gosh, if I continue doing what I'm doing now, you know, I'm going to be dead by the time I'm 60 because I'm, you know, it's not healthy for me. So I must start doing what I love in life. And he started, and you can see where he's gone. I mean, he's a better advocate at this than, far better advocate than me, actually.
No, he is. He totally is. One question, it's related to the beginning of our conversation, but yet I think it's important to tackle it. When you talk about about money, you talk about also salary and, or whether it's salary or whatever you sell, your services or yeah. whatever. And then there's the question, what am I worth? And I feel like this worst thing regarding money is a weird also
absolutely.
Approach to money.
Absolutely. You are so in tune. You are so intuitive. So people who say, what am I worth, are actually lost. Because you know, if you say, well, what is Gregory worth or what is Peter worth? Well, at certain moments, we are of infinite worth. when we are living what we love doing, we are unique, and everybody is unique in this sense. We're of infinite worth. But most of the time, we're worth nothing. So, you know, so, you know, somebody who's a champion at the 100 meters, put him on the 400 meters and he's worthless.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to measure, let's say, your salary by what you're worth, you're going to be lost, because you're both infinite worth and you're worthless. So what you need to be measuring is actually the worth of the service that you're providing, and not your own worth. So this is really what's important to see, that the service you're providing is going to be in a market. You know, you're going to be in some kind of competition, even if you're unique in terms of a generic market. But if you even go into more detail, who's buying your service and what sort of position are they in financially? And what sort of position are you in financially? And the ideal, it's an art more than a science, to come up with a perfect price. And what is perfect when you come up with a perfect price? It's a price which the customer loves to pay you. This is where we come back to love, and that you love to receive from this particular customer. And this is what I call love in business, when you can arrive at a service being offered and a price which a customer loves to pay and a provider loves to provide in terms of a service. And this is really the good business and the best business that you can possibly have. And you will, you know, keep your customers, because they will keep coming back to you. Because they love doing business and you love doing business with them. So this is my sort of like take around pricing, if you like, and the question of worth. And there's no sort of set, you know, pricing system, which is really perfect in this sense. If you get what I'm saying, it's really like creating a work of art.
Mm. So at the same time, I'm wondering, what would you call a sane relationship to money? Is it understanding that money is just, it's in your imagination, but it's a global imagination. That's how the world is working. But it's just an energy, right? Is it how you would call it?
I would say it's a sane relationship to money, you know, is to be aware of your relationship to it. It's like the consciousness of your relationship to yourself and to money while you are dealing with it. And it's not something static. It's a developmental path. So I have been training many practitioners over the years. Right. And I have something which I insist on, which I call brushing your teeth with them all. And what I mean by that is that if you understand this projection work, what we're helping people do to become more conscious is to reclaim these unconscious projections. And I insist with all the people that are doing my work that in order to be part of my, let's call it, ecosystem or community of practitioners, they have to continue doing this work, because it doesn't stop. You know, after you've discovered that money is security, for example, that you're projecting secure security onto money, and you've reclaimed that and you're feeling happy to be secure with money and without money, you can feel very secure without money, and you're also happy feeling insecure. Okay, you've ticked that one off, but then the next thing comes up, like freedom, and then you need to deal with that, and then the next thing comes up, and the next thing comes up. So it's like a continual journey, And that is, for me, the journey. This kind of journey is the sane relationship to money becomes more and more sane. And the more sane it becomes, the wider the and larger the situations in life you can handle without money, but also with money. So, for example, there are many people who are frightened of getting into debt. So when you do this work, you're not only happy with having savings, but you can see that maybe you have a large project in the world and you need to get into debt. And if you're frightened of getting into debt, you can't run your project. So if we can work to allow that fear to disappear and see the benefit of being in debt and see how beautiful it can be to be in debt to somebody that one loves being in debt to, who is contributing to your project, then, you know, we have opened up a whole new area of possibility. And what I'm calling sane, to answer your question, is actually this whole journey that continues.
I understand. And I was wondering, because there are many women listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. and it is said that women have a more complicated relationship to money, meaning that they will have an issue asking for a raise. It's a lot about self-worth. I was wondering what is your experience with women? Is there a specific subject, or what would you say to them specifically?
Thank you for that question. Let me answer and give you two answers to this.
Sure.
The first one is that my book, I called 30 Lies About Money, but my book was a lie in itself because I added on a 31st lie. I don't know if you've seen it. And the 31st lie is that women have a worse relationship to money than men.
Okay.
And actually, you know, I don't generally like being so generic about things, mm-hmm. But I said, I don't think that's true. I think women have a better relationship to money than men. It's more down to earth because they're used to looking after the household, looking after children. They are the real economists. And we men tend to be more focused on abstractions. You know, the whole of the financial market is a mental game. It's a mentally abstract game, actually, and has less to do with real life than, you know, women who are dealing with the household. And it's usually women who have been dealing with the household, at least in the past. So if you read my 31st lie, I'm really supporting women and the way they deal with money. And I'd say that that's more advanced. But the other side is, and you're talking about women having less in terms of being able to less salary for doing the same amount of work and something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in English, this is called the glass ceiling.
Totally.
And one of my women trainers came up with a theory around that, which I think is probably valid. And she's suggesting that women have much more issues around the subject of dependence than men. Mm-hmm. So that they are trying to prove that they are independent mm-hmm. when they go for a salary rise. And therefore, they'd rather get the job proving that they're independent with a lower salary than insist on getting the higher salary. Mm. And that men are not so concerned about our independence. We're more concerned in just getting this pay raise. And that's her explanation, at least, why this situation is still continuing. It's this issue around dependence and independence. Of course, it applies to, you know, this whole thing around dependence, independence applies to men as well. But maybe there is a slight difference, there, and it can be explained in these terms.
I understand. So there's two questions within one. First is, what is the question that you have the most when it comes to money? And the other one is, what is the question that you would love to be asked and that you are never asked when it comes to money?
Oh, I love your questions. I must think about both of them, actually. What is the question that I'm asked the most? You know, I get such a variety of questions that I'm not sure there really is one. But I would say that globally, I mentioned this question of security and insecurity. And this is probably the largest, well, of course, in the world we're living right now, it's the largest topic related to money, or the largest belief related to money, that if you have, you know, enough money or more money, you will be secure and safe. So it's not a really perfect answer to your question, first question.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's fine.
What question would I like to be asked? I'm not really sure, but I can tell you something which will be maybe quite fascinating for you, which may be related to this, is that I've been offering people for, as I say, more than 30 years to look at their relationship to money. And if they want to expand their relationship to money. But I have not yet been able to figure out a system to be able to identify who the people are that are ready to go into this exploration. It's amazing. Mm. You know, from being a marketing expert, I discovered that all my marketing knowledge was useless at this. And all I can do and have been doing, actually, is just inviting people to come and come in, and if they feel ready. But I've not been able to develop a system to actually identify who's ready to come in.
That's actually very interesting. I feel like everyone has somehow an issue with money. But most of people are not aware. And I guess maybe I'm going to say something that is rude or something, but I feel like people that don't have much are the one that have the most sane relationship to money. So because they don't wander and they are not into accumulation somehow. They just...
Well, I wouldn't agree with you there.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of people who don't look as if they're interested in money, but actually they are part of the group that are pushing money away from them.
Right.
And you know, they are no happier or unhappier than on the other side, those who have, you know, a reasonable amount of money or even lots of money. The level of happiness is completely separate from any quantity of money or even any quantity of debt. You have to understand that people in debt, for example, if you're used to being in what you call privilege before and having money in the bank and so forth, you might think that people in debt are less happy than you, but it's not true. You know, every single person has their comfort zone, and people who are used to being in debt are living in their comfort zone in debt and get uncomfortable if they suddenly have savings. And this may be difficult to understand for people that have savings, but I can assure you it's the case. You know, I have so much empirical evidence of this. So the whole idea of, you know, happiness related to quantity of money is actually irrelevant. You know, the two things are completely separate things.
Hmm. Interesting. So then we're going to ask, what happiness is related to? I guess that's the question that I'm like, okay.
You come back to happiness is related to loving what you do in life.
Yeah, totally. Like
it comes back to Pedro Correa and living totally. Your calling. And this is really, you know, Gregory, this is really the object of this money work and has been from the start, it's probably threaded through this talk. It may be clear that, you know, the doing this work with money is not really about money at the end of the day. It's about mm-hmm. helping people to remove all the obstacles, particularly those related to money, but with the other things as well, so that they can finally more and more and more and more live their life calling, and which is also equivalent to the happiness.
Mm, totally understand. So this podcast is called Vlan. So I would like to know what you would open or slam the door to.
Mm. So I'd, you know, it sounds trite and almost a cliche, but I'd certainly open the door to love. I think love is the key to everything at the end of the day. It's what we're born into, and we're not really aware of it in our daily life, in consciousness. So love is the bottom line for me rather than money or finance. So however people have conceptualized love, and in Sanskrit I understand there are several hundred definitions of or different definitions of love. In Greek, it's about 10, I think, and most of us are living with one or two at most. But I would say whatever love is, it's usually a positive connotation, and particularly at time of war, which we are, you know, while we're speaking, I think totally. It's the most important thing that we really need to have within ourselves and outside ourselves.
And actually, talking about war, I think like when you were saying money is an imagination, I think when you are in a country in war, you realize how imaginary it is, because imagine you've bought an apartment, it got destroyed by a bomb, or imagine you've bought like very nice things, or you have your money in the bank and all of a sudden it's worth nothing, and you know. So,
and one of the things being, thank you for that. One of the things being revealed right now, you know, we have this whole thing with sanctions right now, which is all to do with money. But you will see, I predict, and you will see, and we will see, that the sanctions will not work because they are just money. You see, ultimately, there's something stronger than the sanctions. So that's. That's what I would open the door to. Close the door. Would I slam the door on anything? I'm not sure.
You don't have to do it. You can just open if you want. It's not compulsory to close the door to anything.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. It is necessary in our life circumstances to be able to close the door. In other words, to create boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important. So sometimes we are open when it would really be better to be closed. And at other times we're closed when, of course, it would be better to be open. But coming back to love, I believe we need to love both sides of that. So we need to love our capability to close ourselves off, and we need to love our capability to be open. And this opening and closing is a very natural phenomenon, I think, in the whole of nature. You see the cycles of spring, summer, autumn, and winter. It's opening and closing and opening and closing and opening and closing. And I think... I think we need to love ourselves in that as well. So that would be my final statement.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your patience to listen to all my rambling, and particularly in English. And I thank anybody.
No, that's perfect.
And I thank anybody who's been, any of the listeners who have been able to get to the end of this, and particularly with your French speakers, if they've managed. Merci beaucoup. Je vous aime.
Merci beaucoup, Peter. Merci d'avoir écouté Vlan. Si vous avez aimé l'émission, n'hésitez pas à mettre des étoiles sur vos plateformes de podcast préférées. Vous pouvez aussi partager l'épisode sur vos réseaux sociaux, Instagram Stories, Facebook, LinkedIn, où vous voulez. Je suis Grégory Pouy. Vous pouvez me retrouver sur l'intégralité des plateformes sous le nom Greg From Paris. Si vous avez des idées pour des invités, si vous avez des commentaires, n'hésitez surtout pas à m'envoyer un message. Allez, merci et à bientôt !